Distant Dog Barking, Episode 6, written by D.D. McWolf. Sam picked his way along a narrow game trail that ran tight up against the upper town wall in a northwesterly direction. Red Fox had told him about the trail, and that it ran all the way along the cliff undisturbed except in a few places and where it crossed a creek or two, and that once he hit the power line easement, he could follow it right to the top side of May Creek. He'd remembered Chris's double-wide being situated just after the power lines, up against a cliff that was simply an extension of this bluff as it petered out to the north. Sam had spent the night at Red Fox's cabin, and before dawn they'd both risen to deal with the three corpses beside the burned-out fire. Sam had first removed the clothing from the body he felt was closest to his size, then found it had shit himself, so he had to scavenge the oversized pants from another corpse. Then he took a ballistic vest and gear belt, a tactical ball cap, the best AR of the bunch, and all the mags from all the bodies. Then, lashing a rope around the ankles, the two men dragged the bodies one at a time up to the tree line. Sam then dug a shallow grave, presided over by Red Fox, who talked without taking a breath, and the three cadavers were dumped unceremoniously into the trench before being covered with the excavated dirt and pine brush to disguise the site. They never did find the fourth body of the man called Jake, despite searching in a 100-yard radius, and Red Fox concluded that he'd been eaten by Forest brothers and sisters, whoever they were. But Sam feared he'd made a clean escape, and regretfully, he may have to wrangle with that guy again, later, at a future date. A vengeful adversary was the worst type, he warned himself. Red Fox had then rustled up a breakfast of corned beef hash and black coffee and continued his tales of the strange and unusual. The old Indian was a talker, and whether it was just compounded solitude or simply the meandering way that Native Americans articulate, Sam had become entranced by Red Fox's cryptic vernacular, loaded with accounts of otherworldly goings-on, volatile warrior ghosts and shape-shifting forest beasts of his imagination, and Sam concluded that as a medicine man, Red Fox had developed a colorful way of seeing the unprovable, and he was glad to be blind to all that hokum. After breakfast, Red Fox had said that he'd send someone along to accompany Sam on his hike to join Kaylee at the Double Wide. So Sam had foolishly waited around all morning. Then after lunch, Red Fox had asked, "Why are you still here, Sam?" To which Sam had replied that he was waiting for Red Fox's guide to show up, and Red Fox laughed. "Oh no, when you leave, he will follow." "Oh, it's an imaginary friend," Sam thought to himself. So he'd shed his uniform and put on the clothes and gear of the dead men, and as he exited the cabin to leave, Red Fox was waiting in the meadow with his curved Cho Anito hex stick and summoned him to join. "Take a knee," Red Fox ordered. Sam obliged and dropped down to one knee to receive the old shaman's blessing. Sam was romanticizing in his head this moment to be a modern iteration of knighthood, but then when Red Fox struck him on the crown of his head with the stick, Sam yelped in pain and jumped to stand up as a rivulet of blood ran down around his right ear. "Are you not a warrior?" Red Fox asked, surprised by Sam's squealing reaction. Sam suddenly felt childish, and Red Fox ordered him to take a knee again and not react to the sudden pain, and that he would strike him again and again if necessary until he showed it had no effect. Sam had braced himself and held firm for the second thwack from the pointed stick, which this time delivered a plumb line of blood down his left cheek. "Good," Red Fox had responded. "These wounds are the balance to the lives that you took last night. If you do not shed a little blood as a result of killing those men, then that restitution would be owed to you, and you would not know when to expect it, and it would distract you and compromise your focus. Whether a warrior kills men who are good or men who are bad, atonement must always be sought. By this blood, your debt is now paid, and in gratitude for saving my life, You are now warlocked by the stick gifted to me by a great Cho'anito, and take with you the name I give you now, the name of Shoots Four. This is a great warrior name, and all who hear it will know of your deeds. Grabbing Sam's collar, Red Fox now pulled him to stand, then removed his pipe from a buckskin bag and lit it, working up a good mouthful of smoke, which he then blew in Sam's face, and it was all Sam could do to suppress a cough. Then Red Fox produced a huge feather and smacked Sam in the face with it before tying it onto his AR-15. He then spun Sam around by the shoulders and shoved him hard in the direction of the cliff face. "Fuck off now down the trail to the woman who awaits you," Red Fox commanded. "And I will see you again, Shoots Four, when you blow back again this way." Sam wasn't sure whether to feel abused or grateful, or if he should turn and say goodbye, but decided that walking away stoically without sentiment was in keeping with the warrior qualities Red Fox had expected of him. So, without looking back, he'd headed up through the meadow around the cabin out of sight to the cliff face where, sure enough, he found a narrow game trail heading in the direction of May Creek. "Be off the trail by nightfall," Red Fox had hollered after Sam when he was out of sight. "Oh, that's great," Sam thought to himself. "So much for having an invisible guide and guardian, and with 6 miles of gnarly trail ahead of him, it'd be a challenge to reach Kaylee by dark. He'd have to hustle." So here he was, booking along a trail that was as much rocks and tree roots as it was level dirt, but the view was beyond amazing. The mountainside overlooked the convergence of two valleys, two river systems, and 180 degrees of peaks belonging to the Western Cascades. In fact, May Creek was really the start of the temperate plain that leads straight to the Salish Sea and the tail tip of Vancouver Island, producing that rainforest climate Seattle's famous for as the rain clouds rolling in from the Pacific crash against the mountains and dump their load. Sam was impressed that this altitude afforded him such a panoramic perspective, and at that moment he realized, in fact, how much he loved the security and fortress of the mountains. He'd never been a fan of the beach, not since a junior high school field trip to the Oregon coast where they'd supposed to have paddleboarding lessons, but a shark sighting had kept everyone out of the water, and his mom had made him a tuna melt, which was cold and hard and fishy by the time lunch rolled around. Plus, someone had kicked sand into his backpack, which had found its way into his sandwich, and being famished, he'd forced himself to eat it anyway and gagged as he chewed and swallowed the salty, crunchy, cheesy, pungent, fishy foodstuffs while sitting on a rock being blasted by the cold Pacific winds. What a strange new reality this was, hiking along in full battle regalia, alone and at peace in the warm, aromatic breezes of a sunny spring day, listening to birdsong while the rest of the country, or perhaps even the world, has fallen into disarray and mayhem. This was one of those fleeting moments of euphoria that comes so scarcely in life that you can actually recall each instance of it with vivid alacrity. Hiking along, sunbathed and swathed in an inappropriate feeling that all was now right with the world, Sam felt profoundly grateful for having escaped death, but more for having the chance to properly avenge the murder of his sergeant by crushing those fucktards. I mean, how often does that shit actually happen in everyday life? Never. In fact, so never ever that the world's assholes have invented religion and coined a myriad of crappy platitudes to stop regular folks from exacting vengeance upon them, so they can continue to screw others over with impunity. But that's all history now, Sam smiled to himself. Those assholes and the downright evil can no longer hide behind religious dogma, or law and order, or the power of money, because the only power now is true grit, brute force, and steel balls. The only law out here now is natural fucking law. Now an eye for an eye, the wreaking of retribution for every infraction, and the absolute administration of personal justice is imperative, because who are you going to call if someone does you wrong? Who'll fight my battles if not me? Sam twigged. If it's anything less than perfect, instant dominance, then I'll fall victim to someone else of greater conviction. Any hesitation on my part will spell death from here on out. The fastest draw wins, Sam realized in an aha moment, and found strange comfort in this newborn awareness that this was the old Wild West again. Though this cognizance was perhaps triggered by the shafts of sunlight illuminating the path ahead, it was nevertheless thrilling to realize the world's power matrix had shifted from the 1% over to the 99% just in a matter of a week, and those with all the moneyed authority would be helpless fluffy bunnies in the streets and the cities they once owned, and snacks and chew toys if they dared venture out here into the forests. What did Jesus say? Those that live by the gun shall die by it. Well, America lives by the gun, always has, and will to its bitter end. Though Sam had only been active duty a brief time, he'd stemmed from a military family and had several friends in various branches as well as private contracting, and not one would uphold fealty to a broken government, nor to the whims of the power elite, nor for a paycheck that couldn't be cashed. Every one of those men and women would find their way to breaking contracted ties the minute their family or loved ones were vulnerable, and right now, right this minute, every one of them would be going AWOL or heading that way if they weren't deployed overseas. Even Chris, in the hour before his death, had let slip he may have to bail on his post to protect Kaylee, because who else did she have, with Ryan dead and a baby on the way? Sam checked his watch and realized he had a hell of a trek ahead if he was to get to her before sundown, and he sipped from the steel canteen around his neck without breaking pace, pressing harder onward, amped by his epiphany of this new survival of the fittest actuality. Though initially slightly embarrassed by it, he was actually loving his new name, Shoots 4, and the feather flagging softly from his rifle as he walked, and the matching lines of blood striping each cheek, and the protective warlock spell cast by a crazy old shaman living in the woods. It was all just too much fun, and then he giggled out loud as he remembered meeting a cougar on the trail once, and how he'd run screaming in the opposite direction like a girl. But not now, fuck that. He'd stare it down. Besides, what wild beast wouldn't succumb to a barrage of 5.56? And then, just as he was thinking about cougars, a sound of footsteps paused him. But it stopped when he did, so he decided it was simply an echo of his own footfalls, and he resumed along the trail. And so did the echo. Only it seemed off slightly and heavier than his. He stopped again. Same again, it stopped too. He walked further, shifting the length of his pace, and stopping suddenly, he then heard an extra step. They fucked up. Someone was following him, and they fucked up by taking an extra step after he'd stopped, but looking all around, he couldn't see anything, so facing the direction he'd just come, he made a few running steps on the spot, hoping whoever it was would continue following and come into view behind him, but all was silent. Did this mean whomever it was had a direct line of sight and only walked when he did? That'd be freaky, he thought. He flipped his AR onto binary and positioned his trigger finger alongside the trigger guard in readiness. He then turned and continued on towards May Creek, with someone unseen pacing him, and his 15 minutes of feeling top of the world evaporated like spit in the desert as he waited to be shot in the back by an invisible, superior assailant. Fuck. Covering 2 more miles of shitty terrain and broken path, Sam Stalker never got any closer. When the sun finally dipped behind the ridge and he was still an hour or more from the double wide, he began to feel pretty fucking anxious as he tripped along in the dusk, foot-weary on this poor excuse for a trail, and realizing he wouldn't reach the double wide before dark, as Red Fox had advised against. Was this what Red Fox was warning him about? Maybe this fucker was waiting until dark to take him down. Maybe he had a FLIR scope and was just biding his time to pick him off safely from the cover of night. Or maybe it was just a bear or cougar, but it sure as shit sounded like a two-legged thing, and heavy like a big fat dude trudging along in tandem. Fuck this. Just as Sam was starting to plan countermeasures, another noise ahead drew his attention. Through the trees, on his trajectory, he could just make out the light of a fire and the sounds of voices. He was still 150 yards away, so he couldn't make out what was going on exactly, but he had the advantage of dark, and so he made his way closer, all the time intensely aware he had a possible threat at his six. He had to ask himself, was he being hemmed in? At about 60 yards from the fire, he was close enough to determine that this was a group of six young people, four guys and two girls, relaxedly lounging around a fire on the edge of the power line easement, smoking weed and talking about killing people. They reminded him of a gang of homeless tweaker skateboard kids that hung around his childhood neighborhood in Austin. No place to live, but always enough money to buy marijuana and cell phones, presumably from robbing houses, and always slightly menacing with their Manson family world owes me a living attitude. Only this flock of shitbirds was different. They had guns, and they were gesticulating with them as they plotted among themselves about what they were going to do to some poor jerk who'd pissed them off. Demonstrating zero muzzle awareness, Sam found himself hoping they'd accidentally shoot one another and he could just continue on his way. But sure as shit, he didn't want to tangle with this bunch of idiots. Not that they looked like a real threat, but anyone can catch a bullet if enough are fired off, so he'd have to skirt above them through the scree, which would take forever if he was to keep quiet and undetected. But then just as he was thinking that, he heard his stalker suddenly break from the trail behind and scramble noisily into the stone field above, with absolutely no concern for stealth. After a few seconds, even the tweakers heard it and they shushed each other and fumbled to ready their motley assortment of weaponry. Sam tucked in close behind a tree to watch, curious how this was all going to unfold. The tweakers formed a nervous huddle and pointed their weapons up the hill, shouting in mock bravado.
"Hey, asshole, come down here and we won't shoot you,"
one scraggly girl shouted.
"Yeah, fucker, don't fuck around with us, we got guns,"
the other female added.
"Shush, listen,"
one of the guys urged.
"You can't sneak up on us, fucker,"
a dreadlocked male shouted.
"We're gonna shoot your ass," another guy yelled.
Sam was riveted. It was like watching a car wreck in slow-mo, and he couldn't wait to see the outcome of all this. He was also envious, slightly, of his stalker for having the balls to be so noisy. Or maybe he was just someone taking the same trail as he, and this guy wasn't going to be deterred by a few nasty kids in the woods. But then, all of a sudden, he could hear the cracking of branches, and a boulder the size of a watermelon came through the tree canopy and landed square in the fire pit, sending an explosion of embers and flames in all directions. And the kids howled in fear and pain and all fled down the hill across the easement into the trees on the far side, squealing and yelling like a passel of hogs until their squawking faded out into the distance and it fell stony quiet.
"Another shot was fired,"
Sam was amazed and impressed. That must have been a 50-yard shot putt, and what the hell? Then the footsteps retreated and returned to Sam's 6 o'clock position. Jesus. But try as he might, he couldn't catch even a glimpse of the follower through the dark and trees, and then he remembered. Jesus, Red Fox's promise to send a guide along with him, or a guardian or whatnot to accompany him out to May Creek, and Sam was stunned. Leaning back on the tree, he took a deep breath and shouted out into the dark toward his follower.
"Thank you, sir. Thank you for doing that. That was amazing. Thank you."
And no one replied. Sam emerged from the tree line and gazed at the remains of the smoldering campfire with renewed awe. A 60-pound slab of volcanic schist lay in the middle of the fire pit, and all the tweaker's stuff was blanketed in a dusting of ash and embers. Sam snatched up their boxes of ammo before continuing on a much improved trail up along the edge of the tree line, and now, with no roots and rocks, he could pick up the pace. About 100 yards from the fire pit, he tossed all the ammo into the trees, keeping only one half-full box of .223 that had run in his rifle. Pretending he was examining the rounds, he snuck a sly peek back in the direction he'd come to see if he could somehow catch a glimpse of his escort, But all was quiet, and he sensed the follower had now returned back. God knows how they'd traverse that game trail back to Index in the dark. For his own sake, Sam was just happy to be moving forward, and he hoped there'd be a moon, because in 30 minutes there'd be zero light out there, even in the easement, and the path was way too vague to follow in the pitch black. Kaylee sat on the kitchen floor, cross-legged on a blanket, eating from an assortment of packages and cans to the light of her headlamp, which lay on the blanket, covered in a red bandana. A red light was the safest, and she knew not to cook, even though there were 2 full gas bottles out back. Once darkness fell, she wouldn't do anything that'd signify her presence within the double wide. Over the previous 2 days, she'd heard the sounds of gunfights in the distance, as though people's homes were being invaded and defended, and whether it was just local disputes or opportunistic looters, she couldn't tell, but was far too scared to try to find out. Heavily pregnant and alone, and about as vulnerable as anyone could possibly be, she was pretty much on self-imposed solitary confinement, and hated every fucking minute of it. Over the past days, she'd spontaneously burst into tears at random moments, awoken at all times of night in various states of grief and panic, had paced the floors of the trailer like a nutty zoo animal and succumbed to fits of rage, whereupon she'd have to bury her face in the pillows to suppress her sobs and screams. And not a word from Chris. Why hadn't he returned with Ryan's body as he promised? Was Ryan still lying there in their apartment, just decomposing away along with those evil fuckers who murdered him? The thought of that, of him alone with his killers, was just too miserable to contemplate. And why was there no radio? And of course the cable was out, and the Wi-Fi would flash a cycle of random red LEDs without ever connecting. This was hell. Hell in the dark, hell in a handcart, hell in a double wide. Albeit only a few days, they were the worst she could remember or imagine ever being subjected to. And what would she do if Chris didn't come back, and how long should she wait? There were probably enough cans and packaged foods to last her 2 more weeks, but what about beyond that? Was this just the end of the world? Or just her world? Would her double wide be invaded next, and her raped and murdered, and her unborn child die in the womb? Tears rolled down her cheeks as she ate from a can of maple-smoked baked beans and munched down a bag of barbecue kettle chips. Failing all the possible threats, this diet alone would kill her soon enough, she thought. And over above the sense of gloom and doom, there was a heaviness to the air that seemed particular to this trailer, almost as if it was haunted by its previous inhabitant. Sometimes she'd wake to the sense of being watched, though she never heard a sound to imply that. It was just a faint ping on her sixth sense, and it made her uneasy, not because it exuded evil, but because she just wanted to know who or what it was and what she was sensing there, just beyond eyesight, observing her. Perhaps her parents' spirits were keeping a watchful eye, she imagined. How ironic that'd be after her disdain for the paranormal. As a scientist, she grappled with the notion of the unknown. Seeing, handling, and classifying is proof of fact. Everything else was simply theory or fantasy or fanciful superstition. But the dirty little secret harbored by her community of scientists, was that the tangible elements of planet Earth, meaning all that could be seen and touched, amounted to a measly 10% of what they suspected actually existed, and the remaining 90%, being unquantifiable, was as enigmatic as dark matter, but no less real for being so. This was scary for a scientist, for every scientist. The literalists viewed everything through a keyhole and convinced themselves they saw everything there was to see, while the quantumists peered through the same keyhole but embraced the idea of an infinity room filled with a myriad of unseen wonders beyond the shadows. Either way, being unable to define a hunch was unsettling, and she longed for Ryan to be there. Or, if not Ryan, obviously, then Chris. And if not Chris, then take me the fuck away from all this to a far-off land that hadn't been melted down by social unrest. Because the unknown was driving her to the brink of her own personal meltdown, she started to imagine what would happen if she just unlocked the door and bolted into the night outside, screaming and crying, and if someone would have compassion on her and take her in. But her head was full of doubts, planted by Ryan, who said it would be everyone for themselves, and without the law to impose restraint, then even the nicest people would become opportunistic and behave inappropriately or murderously. And the plan had always been to lie low as possible and evade detection until the worst of it had passed. A year, Ryan had said. It would take a year. Jesus, a fucking year. She'd be dead of starvation in less than a month. It amazed her that life could turn from a sweet spot to a bucket of shit and grief virtually overnight. A light tap, tap on the door froze her mid-bite, and she carefully lowered the spoon and can in her right and left hands and picked up her Sub 2000. Brought it to her shoulder and slowly slid the push-button safety to off. Tap, 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 again, a little louder. She pointed low on the front door where she felt a person's chest would be if they were outside, standing at the foot of the three concrete steps. Then a voice, very softly, said, "Kaylee. Kaylee, you in there? It's Sam Patterson. I was with Chris when we brought you here. Are you in there?" Tap, 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 again. Kaylee's mind raced to recall that day Chris had driven her from Seattle and it all came back. Of course, the driver. The grunt driving the Humvee. She crawled across the kitchen floor to the door and tapped back three times. "You have ID?" she asked in a whispered voice. "Yes." "Push it under the door," she ordered, though of course she couldn't remember his face, nor his name to know if it was genuinely that soldier, but she needed to sound like she did, and after some rustling, a Texas driver's license slid under the brush draft excluder, revealing a handsome, slightly smiling face of someone friendly enough to open the door for. And Kaylee promptly turned the deadbolt, slid another bolt at the bottom of the door and a chain mid-door before turning the handle. "Remember, I'm armed," she said as she opened the door a couple of inches. "I know, it's safe," he replied as he pushed in and relocked the door behind him. "Why are you on the floor? Are you hurt?" he asked. "No, get down. We have to stay behind the windows. And whisper. Vehicles come up here and shine their headlights from both sides. I think they're trying to spot me through the curtains," she answered. "Jesus, that's not creepy," Sam replied as he sat cross-legged on the floor, facing her. "Where's Chris? Where's Chris?" she asked urgently. Sam had already decided he was going to lie to her when she asked. He knew she'd be in a depleted state when he got here, 3 days alone, pregnant and eating out of cans, and he didn't want to completely crush her with the news of her brother. He'd wait until she was in a stronger place, he figured. "He's back at Fort Lewis. We ran into some troubles down near Redmond that night we left you. After that, he really started worrying about you, Kaylee. He asked me to go AWOL, you know, just so I could get up here and be with you. And he said he'd write me up as KIA. The Humvee took some fire, so the story should hold up. You know, I'm not exactly valued property as a grunt," he chuckled. "But Chris, well, he's a Sarge, so, you know, he'll probably be tied up for a while." "But you're here to stay, right?" she pressed. "At your service. It's an order," he added with a smile to ease her evident fears of being abandoned again. Tears rolled down her cheeks and she hung her head to wipe them away with the back of her hand. "Is it really bad out there?" "Yeah, it's pretty gnarly," he confirmed. "You think the army can restore order?" "It's doubtful. Not for a while, anyway. People have gone full rogue from what I can tell. We saw some bad shit just getting you up here, and I ran into a gang of tweakers with guns back along the power line a ways. They were freaky. It's probably that way everywhere by now, I expect." "When you say you ran into trouble in Redmond with Chris, you mean you had to shoot people?" "Yeah, you know, a couple," Sam replied. "Fuck, it's really bad, isn't it?" "Yeah, it is. And if you've already had people cruising by here, then we need to bug out further. It won't be safe staying put." he said, affirming her suspicions.
I know. I realized that. But I was alone, you know. I was waiting for Chris to tell me what to do.
It's fine. We'll figure it out, okay?
Sam said. Has there been an outbreak of any kind?
Kaylee asked.
You mean disease?
Yeah.
Not that I know. But I haven't had any calms since Tuesday, the day we picked you up. So honestly, I have no idea what's going on. It's Friday today, right?
She asked.
I think so, yeah. Last 3 days have kind of felt like a month.
Oh, God, yeah.
She sighed. You're a microbiologist, right? Sam asked her.
Yeah. Chris told you, right?
Yeah. He said you were super smart. Is an outbreak gonna happen, you think?
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, she said, reluctantly.
A pandemic? Sam asked.
Or epidemic. Depends on what's happening worldwide. If this is just domestic and the government can't rein it in, then yeah, probably won't be long.
A virus, you mean? Sam asked.
Maybe. Could be any novel pathogen, but for sure all the medieval things like typhus, you know, cholera, plague, dengue, polio, etc. You know, the really nasty stuff that killed millions in the past. It'll make that COVID-19 scare, you know, back in 2020. It'll look like the common flu, which it was, virtually.
Fuck me, Sam exclaimed. And look how long it took us to bounce back from that. I know the military is worried about lockout and invasion. No one's going to take us in or come to help, militarily, basically.
Really?
Kaylee asked.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants to deal with millions of crazy fucking Americans looting, raping, and shooting at each other. And once the worst is over, there's a serious threat from Krink,
Sam exclaimed.
What's Krink?
Kaylee asked, curious.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Military acronyms. And he laughed.
Krink stands for Allied China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. You know, all banded together to invade and occupy. Major threat. They say Krink may have started that whole coronavirus thing to crash our economy. Then China popped up with that fucking vaccine a couple of months later. Do you remember that? To try and beat us to the punch.
Actually, it wasn't man-made. We traced its genome, Kaylee said.
But wow, yeah, I could see how they might have released it, you know, undermine Western dominance.
Right,
Sam concurred. And China got to whittle down their population to a more manageable size, maybe. Crazy idea?
No, right again.
Shit, really? Is that what happened? According to the higher-ups, you know, but it's probably classified, so I'll have to kill you now.
He said, with a smirk.
Oh, yes, please, do me a fucking favor, she said.
Come on, you don't mean that,
Sam consoled. She sighed.
No, I need to live for this little thing,
she said, cradling her belly and feeling motherly for the first time in days. Then, looking up at him in the dim light, she said,
thanks for coming, Sam, really. I think, I don't know. I was starting to think I'd just shoot myself. I just couldn't imagine crawling out into the forest and trying to survive all on my own.
In the dark of the double wide, he could just make out a fresh set of tears rolling down her cheeks.
Okay, so you're not alone now, right? I've got your back, and you're not going to think like that anymore, okay?
Sam urged.
Sir, yes, sir, she whispered with a reluctant smile.
Red Fox sat on his porch, watching a starry sky over Index Mountain, listening to a whippoorwill cry hauntingly around the cliffs above his cabin. These strange birds were a rarity in these parts, and so its presence was of some alarm to Red Fox. Being the only resident on the hillside, he knew its call was for him, and he braced himself to hear if it ended abruptly or faded off into the distance. It flew back and forth 3 times between the cabin and cliff above, then swooped around in front of the porch where he could see its sickle-shaped silhouette flit across the Prussian blue night sky and disappear against the forest below, crying all the way into the horizon. He breathed a sigh of relief. If it had stopped its wailing while still visible, it'd mean his life would soon end. But having flown off with its lament, it had left good fortune. His Wenatchee warrior spirits were being vigilant indeed, and had steered the whippoorwill off to sound the death knell for another poor soul elsewhere.
as he raised a beer to his lips, a deep, throaty grunt at his right side caused him to slowly lower the bottle, and he respectfully placed it on the deck beside his rocker. He could see from the corner of his eye a gargantuan black mass move out slightly from the corner of the cabin and stop, imagining somehow it was concealing itself at the gable end. Despite having to stoop to peer at him beneath the porch roof, it breathed heavily in a rumbling, gurgling bass, like an old spring-fed well. "Thank you for coming," Red Fox said softly. The black mass exuded a short string of pops and clicks and then a long sigh. "Can I ask, did he reach the pregnant woman safely?" Red Fox queried. The mass grunted in response. "Thank you, young Choanito. I have left a gift for you on the hearthstone. Please accept this small symbol of my appreciation." The black mass huffed again and eased silently back behind the cabin's gable end, out of sight. Despite its prodigious proportions, it didn't make a sound as it walked away, and only a clanking a few seconds later alerted Red Fox it had retrieved the food offering he left at the fire pit. But it was too dark to see that far into the meadow. Not that he'd have looked anyhow, as that would have been disrespectful, and quite possibly dangerous. Red Fox sighed, smiled, and took a slug of beer and lit an American Spirit cigarette. The black pack, full tar. "Crazy times," he said out loud. "Cheers to your health, Brother Whippoorwill."